ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
in search of Krishna consciousness.
ओम ज्ञानतिमिरस्यनाञ्जनाशलाकाय श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनमस्ते सरस्वतीदे गौरवं प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषाश्रमं श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य गोविन्दानन्द श्री अद्वैतानन्द
हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे
devotee. They are quite
they are very much increasing, Bhagavad Gita. And you can see his actions, you know, to know more and more and more, as soon as possible, as faster as possible. So here, he just leaves one topic aside and then, you know, go ask another question and leads into a different discussion and different personalities glorification. So his eagerness is shown here. When someone is listening carefully, you see that they ask questions. Otherwise, if someone is not listening carefully, then okay, whatever it is, you know, can hurt. But if someone is thoughtful and listening carefully, then more questions will come. So it's always good to ask questions. Because sometimes, you know, we see in ourselves, especially after, you know, practicing Krishna consciousness for many years, we pretend to know everything. We think that, you know, if I ask such question, you know, what that person will think. That even after so many years, you don't know such questions, you know, answers to such questions. So we sometimes, you know, we hold back. So it's always good to, no matter what years you have spent in Krishna consciousness, still, Vedas are unlimited. And our one life won't be enough to understand in full capacity. There's always, there are some doubts and questions that we should clarify. Prabhupada says doubts are born of mode of ignorance. So, better to ask, be inquisitive, and remove our doubts. Rather than, you know, putting falsely ourselves that, you know, I know everything. So we should ask questions. So here, Viduji, although he is such a pure devotee, you know, he is putting inquiry to know and hear more about Krishna and his devotees. I remember in 2016 when I was in Vrindavan, so my Guru Maharaj was giving Krishna Katha. He was talking on Krishna book, reading Krishna book. So, our Brahmadir Prabhu came, and you know, Maharaj didn't know, Guru Maharaj didn't know. So, Maharaj was about to start talk, and Prabhu came and then sat. So, later on, I realized how expertly my Guru Maharaj just changed the whole thing. So he greeted him and then started talking to him and then he introduced. By the way, who is Brahmadir Prabhu? Do you know that book, Perfect Questions and Perfect Answers? Yeah. Yeah. So Brahmadir Prabhu was a peace co-worker and he happened to travel in India for his work and then he happened to see Prabhupada in Mayapur and then he spent almost 10 days in Mayapur. And every day, Prabhupada would spend so much time with him. And so, Prabhupada would ask questions, and Prabhupada would answer all his questions and remove all his doubts. So, there is one nice portion where, in the talk, Prabhupada mentioned that there was, when you read that book, end of the chapter, end of the book, somewhere there is one long pause, it's written. So someone asked a question, so to Brahmadir Prabhu, what was that long pause for? Prabhupada and Brahmadir Prabhu both started, I mean both became silent, you know, and they just, you know, it was long pause, conversation stopped. So Brahmadir Prabhu said, you know, that was my transformation within that pause. My heart was changing. You know? And then later on he said, I was sitting in back of the temple, outside alone, and then Yamuna Mataji comes, and she started talking to me, and she is pleading, you know, Prabhu, you are so lucky, you know, Prabhupada is spending so much time with you, please, surrender to him, like that. And then, Yamuna Prabhu said, that was the moment I decided to think, I'm becoming Prabhupada's disciple. So, yeah, so coming back to that, incident. The Guru Maharaj started asking him questions. And whole 1 hour, 1.5 hour went. And Maharaj didn't speak at all from Srimad Bhagavatam. But he made him speak about his interaction with Prabhupada. And I said, how expertly he tricked Brahmadev Prabhu and every one of us. That such a person came and he took opportunity to inquire from him for our benefit. What Prabhupada was, how he was, and what were the instructions given to him and all the instructions. So, yes, asking questions and getting answers, hearing questions and answers of great personalities and devotees and Supreme Personality Godhead is very glorifying, very beneficial. Now here, this question, how come Veena was very sinful? So a little background, the questions will be answered in the course of time, but for, I'll discuss a little bit for our clarification today as well. So there is a little history behind that. When King Anga was performing sacrifice to please the demigods, it wasn't finishing because demigods were not appearing end of the sacrifice. So Brahmanas were very perplexed, and same time King Anga also was perplexed. What is happening? And then he inquired to Brahmanas. What is the problem? Why is so that our sacrifice is not getting completed? Why demigods are displaced with our actions? They are not appearing. So they looked into Veena's life and they found out that because you don't have sun, that is why this sacrifice is not getting completed. It is very interesting. This is the reason they gave. Narad Muni once went to Hastinapur after Mayadhanu created that Indraprastha, and that assembly was so gorgeous that it wasn't found anywhere else in whole creation in the material world. It was like Indra's assembly hall. So Yudhishthira Maharaj set a date for inauguration and he invited everyone, news spread everywhere in whole university. He invited everyone to come for inauguration of our assembly hall. So all the demigods and everyone came, and so Narad Muni also came. And Narad Muni had a nice conversation with Yudhishthira Maharaj. And Narad Muni asked three questions to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And he said that, how is your wealth? He asked. How is your study of Shastra? And third question he asked, how is your marriage? So of course, Yudhishthira Maharaj is Dharmaraj. He knows all the answers. But he took opportunity to hear from Narada. So he said, please, you instruct me. You tell me. I don't know. So then Narada Muni answered these three questions. Wealth is perfect when it is utilized in service of Vaishnavas and the Supreme Lord. And then your knowledge is perfect when your sadachar is aligned with that knowledge, Shastric knowledge. Your achar, so basically sadachar, your etiquettes are as a inside and outside. So just gaining knowledge from Shastra is not enough. One has to put into practice. So unless that is done, your knowledge of Shastra is not perfect. And the third point, third question he answered, when one has offsprings, grahastha especially, then your marriage is complete. So one all grahasthas should have child, the person you say. Otherwise it's incomplete. So nowadays we see people have relationships, they would like to have a partner, but they don't want to take responsibility of children. So that is not like going to be grahastha. So these sages, these brahmanas pointed out this fault in king. that you don't have any offspring. And that's why this sacrifice is not getting completed. So then he inquired further, so how shall we go about this? I have done my part, but it's a wheel of providence, it looks like. I don't have any child, so what to do? So he said, okay, now forget about demigods, we'll do one sacrifice for pleasing Lord Vishnu. And that sacrifice, our aim would be to get a child for you. So they said, okay. And they performed sacrifice for getting a child. And it became successful. Lord Vishnu appeared and gave him sweet rice from the fire. And King Venu gave that sweet rice to his wife, Sunita. That Sunita became Indigo's star, became pregnant and delivered a boy named Venu. But it says, how come, this Venu has so much demoniac qualities? He was so demoniac, when he was a little child, like his boys, he would play with other boys, and in playing, he would kill other boys, He would slaughter them. So this demoniac Venu, when he grew up, his atrocities to society became very, very intense. So this was another question later on asked, that how come this person is so sinful? So another point to be noted there, that when the sages say, you don't have child, before that you can perform, one point I mentioned, probably mentioned, that the sages said, you are very pure and very pious in this life. But in this life you are very sinful. And that's why you are not having son. And then they decided to have a sacrifice and then have something. So karmic reaction was coming on. So when the question asked, how come Venu was so sinful? Same answer is given. The karmic reaction was coming. And it says that Sunita is the daughter of death personified. And Veda says that son gets quality from his mother and daughter gets quality from his father, her father. So King Venu was imbibing the qualities from his mother's lineage. Lineage of immediately. And that's why he had so many bad qualities. So one can ask the question, what is his fault to be born in that family? That also has karmic action and reaction, karmic viewpoint to that. We all chose to take birth in Kali Yuga. Why? It is our fault? Yes, it is our fault. We only wanted to live in this kind of surrounding so we can exercise our free will. And in such a degraded way, we can exercise our free will when we want to have all kind of degradation, purification. And that's why, perfect situation is really, okay, we can do this, not in Satyuga, but in Kali Yuga. So it's our choice. That's why we came here. So, how this thing happened? How come Sunita got such a bad child? So Sunita, like I said, once she was going into forest, this is mentioned in Padma Purana, with her mates, girlfriends, she went to forest. And there she saw one Gandharva named Sushant. So he was sitting there peacefully and meditating and doing his austerity. So this Sunita started harassing him. And this Sushant became a little annoyed. And he said, you rascal girl, go away, don't disturb me. So this person, Sushant, was performing austerity to please Saraswati Devi, so he can become better in his skills, in his fine arts of singing and dancing and playing music. So he wanted to please Saraswati. So he chastised Sunita and sent her away. But Sunita also got angry. But she left. And next day she came with a big wig. And this person was sitting there and she started beating him. So it is said it was a false imitation of her father's beating. Death personified, do such things to sinful people, to rectify them, to verify them. That was his job. But Sunita falsely imitating her father's duty and taking charge, who are you, my father punishes everyone, all rascals like you. So like that, so he started beating Sushanta, who was faultless. So Sushanta then got angry and he called Sunita. But when you get married, you will have very irreligious child, very demonic child. And then he left. And as a consequence, we see that Sunita got son like Veena. So that karma, action and reaction was coming. You can see here. So there is little background here. And here in purport we see Prabhupada do talk about that. So we'll talk about it a little bit on this subject. So here four things I mentioned. Prabhupada quotes Chanakya Pandit. That a father is an enemy when he is too much in debt. Mother is an enemy if she marries for second time. A wife is an enemy when she is very beautiful. And son is an enemy when he is fully strong. So one can ask the question, how come family members become enemies? Yes. Prabhupada says generally it happens time to time in material world. You can become. And this is also part of karma. In Mahabharata, so let's tell one story you might have heard, but it's very interesting. You can hear that again. In Mahabharata, we see how this thing happened. One of the incidents. So when Bhishma, everyone knows, he took vow that I will not get married. Why? Because his stepmother's father asked promise that, if your father begets child from my daughter, Matsyagandha, what was her name? Something else? Satyavati, yes. Then they will get nothing, because you are eldest, and you will be enthroned and you will be the king. So what about my daughter's sons, my daughter's children? You don't get anything. We will kick them out. So he took vow. Okay, I'll take Brahmachari. I'll not get married. And whoever comes from his mother's womb, I'll make sure they are the king. So these two step brothers. Chitrangada and Vichindravidya. They had to get married. And so Bhishma took charge, as he promised to his father's, his mother's father. So he went to Swayambar ceremony happening, where the three daughters, Amba, Amlika and Ambalika, were looking for husband. And there he, by force, kidnapped all three of them for his two brothers. And he brought them. And no one could challenge Bhishma because he was such a powerful king and they were the most powerful. They were the emperors, basically. And same thing happened later on. He went to Ganga also. And he put proposal that we need Gandhari for Dhritarashtra and to get them married. And Shakuni, Gandhari's brother, was not very much happy because Dhritarashtra was blind. Who would like his daughter, his sister to be married to a blind person, although he might be king. But Bhishma, they were so strong, no one could defeat, and no one could challenge him, because if they challenge, then it's understood that their life is finished, basically. So like that, by force, he took Gandhari also, he got him married to Dhritarashtra. So here, same thing happened. And so he brought these three beautiful girls But what happened that Chitrangada was already dead by the time before this happened. Vichitravirya got married to two of them, and later on he also died. But the one of them, Amba, why she didn't get married? Because she expressed to Bhishma Dev that, you know, I have already given my heart to King Sanjay, and he also likes me, so I don't want to get married to your brothers, so please leave me. So Bhishma Dev left her. She went to King Shalya, but Shalya wouldn't accept her, because you have been touched by another man, I won't touch you now. So you go out. So she couldn't, you know, where she would go. Yeah? Here, Brahmana suggested you go back to your father, but she was so humiliated that, you know, I can't go there. So she was left alone, no shelter at all. She didn't want to go to his father, she can't come back to Vichitravirya, nor Shalya accepted, so she couldn't go anywhere. And she became so angry at Bhishma that because of him, I got into this situation. I'm suffering currently. So she took a vow that I will take revenge and I will kill him. But she knew that Bhishma Dev is so powerful, no one can kill him. Even greatest warrior cannot kill him. What to speak of me? I'm such a incapable woman. I don't have power. So she decided, okay, I will perform austerity and please Lord Shiva. And before that, she went to Parshuram actually. And then Parshuram agreed, okay, I will challenge and I'll defeat him and then I'll make him, I'll kill him. Maybe. But then Parshuram and Vishnu, they also fought for so long time and it became neutral fight. And no one could defeat each other. And then Parshuram gave up and he said, you know, I can't do like that. So she then started performing austerity to please Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva came and asked, you know, what you need. So she said, you know, I want to kill Vishnu Dev. So please, grant me this work. And then Lord Shiva said, okay, you will be the cause of his death. And then, after getting that boon, she puts, she went into trance and ignited her body. And she finished herself. And then she took birth as a daughter of Draupadi. And later on she became maid. So she was considered neither male or female, but eunuch. And then we know in Mahabharata what happens when Krishna was, Arjuna was fighting with Bhishma Dev. Even Arjuna couldn't defeat him, right? And then Krishna had to bring Shikhandi. And Shikhandi is none other than this Amba who took birth as a daughter of Draupadi. And seeing Shikhandi, Bhishma Dev didn't shoot any arrows because she's a woman, you can see her. How can I kill a woman? And then Krishna told, this is the time, Arjuna, you shoot the arrows. And that's how Bhishma Dev was defeated. So here we see in the same family, in Kuru dynasty, the same person who was enemy before took birth in the beginning, the karma playing role here. So here we see Prabhupada mentions four incidents, four kind of scenarios, how your enemy from previous birth can take birth in your life as your relative and cause you trouble. So we need to discuss one by one. First one, is a father in debt, is an enemy. So it is a duty of a father to look after their dependents. It is said in Shastra, one should not become father, teacher, guru, unless you deliver your dependence from this cycle of birth and death. Quite heavy. And that's why Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, you know, when he was asked, you know, why don't you have wife and children? Why don't you enter into a ashram? So he said, you know, I can have 100 children, but I don't have capacity to deliver them. That's why I'm not angry. So, according to Shastra, it said, one should not become father, mother, teacher, guru, king, unless you deliver your dependents from cycle of birth and death. So such a heavy responsibility is given to father. And especially when they are such a person who cannot even manage their family, and they get into too much debt, that after he dies, you know, their children has to suffer, their wife has to suffer, because so much debt is being left by the father. So then unnecessarily, you know, children has to go through problems and troubles to pay off the debt. So actually that enemy comes in the form of father and then, you know, leaves their children into such a problematic situation. Then second point is wife. Mother. Mother is an enemy if she marries for a second time. So this is a very, very uncommon thing actually, that mother marries second time. It is sanctioned in the Vedas, in Vedic culture, that man can have many wives. Polygamy was allowed. But it was never heard that woman has more than one husband. Exception is probably, but we know already the explanation of Mahabharata. So polygamy was allowed in Vedic culture, that man has many wives. Why? Prabhupada do explain that in any society, woman and man ratio, there is always more woman, generally, more woman than man. And principle is every woman should get married. Because if woman is left unmarried, then there will be chance of adultery and prostitution. And from there, Varnashankar will come about. Varnashankar body, unwanted body will come about. And then whole Bhagavad Gita, you know, how Arjuna explained, the whole thing will get disrupted from society. So every woman has to get married. So to accommodate that principle, men from higher caste, like Brahmana, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas are allowed to have more than one wife. So they can, and provided they can maintain their manuscript, and please them equally. This is the condition. Not that, you know, you have 10 wives for your sensory relation only, and you look after only one or two wives for others are relation. No. That the king, Chitraketu, had how many wives? Anyone knows? 1 crore. 10 million wives. And he was looking after everyone. Nicely, no problem. What is the maximum population?
5 million.
5 million? So it was a double of the population. Only his wives. So, yeah, if you can maintain and please them equally, then you can have more than one wife. So the Vedic culture was progressive. But for women, it was never sanctioned that they should have more than one husband. Draupadi was an exception case. Why? Because woman is supposed to be chaste. That is the principle. Chastity is a virtue. And Prabhupada do glorify many times about different Vaishnavis mentioning Bhagavatam. And one of them is Gandhari. She was such a chaste lady that when she heard that, you know, I'm going to get married to a man who is blind, you know, so she took a vow that I will also remain blind. How can I show myself superior than my husband in any way? He is my master and I am his servant. So she took a decision that, you know, I will also put a blindfold on my eyes and throughout my life I will serve as a blind person to my servant. So such a great vow she also took. And she faithfully served her husband throughout his life. And you can see how powerful she became, following her dharma of a woman being chaste to her husband. Once she opened her eyes and made her son, Duryodhan, very strong, you know, like an iron body she gave, just by reason, just by looking at him. And she had power to even curse
Krishna.
Right? And then Krishna couldn't, I mean, of course he can, but he upheld her words. She cursed that, you know, you became cause of my son's death, all 100 sons' death, so I'll curse you that your dynasty also will be finished. And then Krishna kept her words. But okay. Who can curse Krishna? And nothing can affect. No curse, material curse can affect. Possibly personal God. But because she is such a virtuous, chaste lady, Krishna made her words come true. So this is the power of chastity. So it's a virtue to have chastity. And in devotional principle, Prabhupada do explain that these devotees, like Kunti Maharani, Gandhari, and other ladies in the Bhagavatam, they are chaste because not only these qualities, but they are chaste to Krishna in any condition, in any situation in their life. They have always taken shelter, even Draupadi, have taken shelter only Krishna. Not only, no other single other person, not even husband. Right? Draupadi also we see. Husbands also couldn't help. But then she called out, go in there. So this is the meaning of your chastity, being chaste, Prabhupada mentions. And one take shelter of Krishna in all circumstances in your life. And that is very much required. And being a woman, faithful to their servant, it helps when they go through their life serving their husband in that mood. It helps to cultivate that mood of being chaste to Supreme Lord. My Guru Maharaj once, I was talking to him, and I was going about different problems, you know, this problem, that problem, this problem, that problem. And then he interrupted me and he asked me, you know, how is your chanting going on? How is your reading going on? So I mentioned, you know, yeah, it goes on. I do read and chant. So then he made a point that, okay, these all things you mentioned are externals, you know, the problems you are mentioning. So one can change all these externals. You can manipulate and, you know, change the situation. For example, okay, I'm not comfortable, for example, you know, living in Brahmacharya ashram, for example. So, okay. So you change to different ashram. But then your problem will continue, in one sense. So Maharaj mentioned that, you know, just changing externals won't help. Real change has to happen within. The transformation, the change you have to brought about is inside, not the outside. So if you are not chanting properly, for example, in Brahmacharya ashram, although all the situation is given perfect, nicely, but still you are not able to do it. How that such person can improve their chanting just by changing the external, getting into grahastha ashram, problem will continue. So he meant to say you have to work inside, not the outside. Outside may remain same or you change it, but real transformation, the real work is changing inside. So then Prabhupada do come mention this point that being a devotee, we may externally pose ourselves as a very nice devotee. We do chant, we do come for morning program, reading and this and that, do service and that. But in our mind, within us, we tend to enjoy. We tend to enjoy material world within our mind. So that is not being chaste to Krishna. When we tend to enjoy, that is also then enjoyment, isn't it? Everyone agrees with that. We can enjoy within the mind also. So that has to be given up. And real work is there. It's very hard actually. You know? One can externally do very nicely and show off that I'm a very nice devotee. But internally, what you are harboring and how you are enjoying internally, no one knows. So that is very difficult and one has to work on that. And Krishna sees that actually. External is okay, but inside Krishna says, how chaste you are, even in thoughts, how chaste you are. So, yes, there is a lot of contamination in our heart, in our mind. So that one has to work on that. So to that point, you know, chastity, woman is never allowed, even in young age. For example, Kunti Maharani, their five sons were very young. In that time, her husband passed away, Pandu Maharaj. But she never got married. Right? So even in such situation where your kids are very young and your husband passes away, but still, woman never gets married. What to speak of getting married and you know, having an relationship. If they do, then according to Shastra, it is your enemy coming back to you and your family to give you trouble. They should be such a chaste that, you know, I heard once Prabhupada mentioned that woman, just a side one, you know, and anyway, I won't mention. Okay, so next point. What's wrong in that? Yes, being beautiful is not wrong, but when you become proud of your beauty, then it is wrong. And in Kunti, that verse, I can't recall. Who would you want to say? That Aishwarya. And translate, please. So she says that unless one is exhausted from all these materials, so called opulence. That one have a lot of wealth, one have a lot of beauty and high parentage, reputation. One is free from all these things. One is exhausted having all these things, you know, and frustrated and, you know, I don't want all these things. Unless one has that feeling, one cannot take full shelter of Lord Krishna. So, Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that when such materialistic person have all these things, or one of them, they tend to become proud. And then pride becomes a real cause of not taking shelter of the person of God. So being beautiful is fine. You know? It's okay. But when you become proud of your beauty, then it's problem. So if wife is very beautiful, then and all that, if she is beautiful and proud, then a lot of problem occurs in family life. And men always like, this is the cycle, that's how you know man and woman are made. They have attraction for each other. And when, especially when a man sees a beautiful woman, there is attraction, naturally, when it happens. And it is so happens that, you know, mind even doesn't discriminate who that lady is, who that girl is. You know? And that's why Shastra is so strong on this point, that one shouldn't be alone with another woman in the privacy. Although, even though if that woman happens to be your daughter, your mother, or your sister. Why? Because mind doesn't discriminate. It can become lusty towards opposite sex. So Shastra is so heavy on that. So when man sees beautiful woman, lust arises. So it is said, you know, that's why you can say, you know, man, when he possesses his head, beautiful woman, it can be an enemy. Because other men will try to hunt that woman and create a problem. And that also happens in material world, it is no fact. Right? So this is how we can see how a woman, beautiful woman, beautiful wife can become enemy. Prabhupada also, you know, Prabhupada didn't like his wife. Lila maybe read that. Because she wasn't so beautiful. Right? And then his father said, yeah, it's good, you married to her. Right? And then Prabhupada later on realized, you know, yeah, my father was right. Otherwise I would have become too much anglos in sense of education. He mentioned Prabhupada. Of course, for our teaching only Prabhupada is pure. So yeah, this is the point. And then third point. No, we are on our fourth point, right? Son is enemy when he is foolish, rascal. So according to Shastra, we say that son, putra, and mutra, urine, comes from the same source. So son, like a father has responsibility to deliver his dependents, son also has responsibility to parents, materially, spiritually. And he becomes cause of sending their parents into hell by not performing his duty. Then he is equal to mutra, he is not called putra. He is equal to urine, just a disgusting substance. So, when son acts like that, then you consider that he is enemy from your previous birth, going to give you trouble. We got 10 minutes, I have a few more points, but I will cut some points and I will just mention some important points, okay? So one can ask, how? See, if these family members are your enemies, turns out to be your enemies, it is your karma, right? It is karma of both people, actually. You have done something wrong to that person, and he is taking revenge, and that's why he is taking revenge in your family. So, what's wrong? You know, I mean, give and take. What goes around comes around. Act accordingly, thinking that although she could have done that, but she didn't. So do remember a person like Draupadi who acted like that, and their glories are being sung even after years. Right? If someone gives charity, if someone gives some help, some aid to some people, who may not deserve some time, but we glorify how such and such person is so nice. Right? So their actions, virtuous actions, are being remembered. rather than you know if someone has done something wrong and can be done, if someone has given him a punch back, you know. So, okay, you know, he has punched him and that person has punched him back. So no one will glorify and remember, you know, forever such acts, you know, okay, what's the deal? But if someone tolerates and takes other way around, different approach, then such person is glorified. So they are increasing their piety. And that piety helps actually to attract mercy of Supreme Lord. It is said, if we have choice, there is one person is very sinful and one person is very pious. Where does bhakti flow? To the pious person. And it is natural, you know, we see in our daily dealings also. We don't like to go and talk to, unless you are in a mood of Nityananda. we try to avoid, you know, those people who give a lot of trouble, right? And who acts very, very degraded way. We naturally try to avoid. But those who are very submissive and gentle, we would like to give them associations and, you know, talk about Krishna. So see, here also we can see how piety attracts bhakti. So it is principle. So that helps. Increasing our piety helps to attract Krishna's and devotees' mercy. So it is very important in my opinion. So people nowadays think that, well, where is the karma? You know, who knows? You know, who I was in previous life and what will be my next life? You know, once Prabhupada was asked about Charak Muni's philosophy, that Charak Muni says, you know, steal, borrow, back, borrow or steal. Always make sure you drink ghee and enjoy your life. And then you want to say. So one person asked, you know, see, this person is saying, you know, just enjoy your life, you know, what's wrong in that? So Prabhupada gave very nice answer. He said, yeah, steal is good. You know, he is telling you to drink ghee, not ganja and liquor, you know. So it's still good, you know. Drinking ghee is very good. But another point to that quote is he meant to say that enjoy this material life by hook or crook. Even you do something wrong, just like stealing, you enjoy your life. Who knows? There is no next life, and no one will chase you because you have stolen anything. No, life is finished. So people do think like that. This is one and one. This life is all and all. Now, why do you worry about next life? Live in the present. Live in the moment. Yeah? This present moment. Yeah, that's fine. Live in the present moment. But considering learning from your past activities and considering your future as well, then you live in the moment. No, animals also live in the moment, right? If you see dog, he's living in the moment, present moment. Where can I find some food? Where can I find opposite sex? You know? They are also living in the moment, but we are not meant to live in the moment like that. We are meant to live in the moment considering what is our future will be and learning from our past. So people try to ignore that karma do exist. No, it doesn't. For example, let's say, take one example. If someone kills someone or robs bank and steals so much money, and it happens that that person is not caught throughout their life and he passes away, he dies. So one can say, see, he did so much bad thing, but still he wasn't getting reaction. And where is karma? And now he's gone, you know, and but people in this world suffered. That person died, a lot of money being stolen, and people suffered because of him. So there is justice, action and reaction. Yes, if you analyze, there is reaction straight away from the action he performed. Such a murderer or thief, after performing such activity, he will immediately, from that time onwards, He will be living stressful life. He will be having anxiety. He will be living fearful life, isn't it? He will be always in fear that, you know, such and such person will catch me. I'll be caught. I'll be punished. So there is peace in his life. So you can see reaction has already started manifesting. And later on, of course, in due course of time, if not this life, next life you will get justice. It will come back to you. So reaction is always there. And if you see these kids, you know, for example, you know, they're in one sense they are free from duplicity, politics, friend and enemy, you know, being dishonest, being judgmental, right? And they are so happy. Isn't it? Because they are free from all these unwanted things, unwanted qualities. When we become adult, you know, we start getting all these things, you know, from our past karma. But these kids, you see, they are happy. They are peaceful and happy. So, when a person lives righteous life with these qualities, then they experience peace and happiness. So we can see the karma, how karma works immediately. The bad action will give you bad reaction, and good action will give you good reaction. So one should always act according to dharma rather than look into karmic reactions of mine or others. And especially this section we are seeing that Anga Maharaj, he gave up that, okay, I can't rectify myself now. So he took opportunity, this adverse situation, he made it to opportunity, and then he took shelter of Lord Krishna more strongly. We see in case of Vidura also, here in the conversation Vidura is present, Vidura also did something. He was kicked out by his son, Duryodhana. And then he took opportunity to go for pilgrimage all over India, and he absorbed himself in devotional service. So even in our life, calamities, problems, and adversities come through our relatives, our devotees, and we are living with. Rather than acting against that person, take that adversity and turn into opportunity to become more deep and more Krishna consciousness, just like King Anga and Vidura Maharaj, rather than, you know, fighting back and creating more action and reaction. So this is the lesson we learned today. If anyone has any questions, comments, corrections, please answer. Yes.
I have a comment. In the beginning of the inquiry.
Yes.
Serious as well. Inquiry was needed. In the case of Vidura, Vidura was a pure devotee of the Lord. Still, he was one material issue.
Yeah.
This reminds me of Srinivas Prabhu and Pamchandra and Michael. These two devotees, Srinivas Prabhu and Pamchandra and Michael, they are spiritually very elevated, fixed in the service, and very happy as well, always smiling. So they come to Srimad Bhagavatam class every day, without failing. They are in Mayapur. Every day they come with a book in the hand, Bhagavatam in the hand. These two devotees, they do give lectures on Chaitanya Charitamrita, they conduct seminars, Bhagavatam. And many times it happens, the speaker is not elevated. Still, they submissively inquire.
Just like today.
That spiritually we are elevated. Still, that purifies us.
Sometimes we think, you know, oh, who is giving Bhagavatam? Oh, and then we see the face and then we go away. That is not right attitude. Whoever speaks Bhagavatam, okay, one may not have those skills like other would have. But nonetheless, we are speaking Bhagavatam. So, those words function of Bhagavatam purifies. And we can see whoever speaks actually, at least in 1 hour class, at least you will get one good point to take with you, right after that. No matter who speaks. I always explain. It is something you will learn, at least one point you will take out. So, you got something, basically. You are not losing it. No matter who speaks. Yeah, that's correct. Yes, Guru.
You narrated this story of Sunita.
Ah, yeah.
What was the reference?
It is in Padma Guru.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes.
Well, like you mentioned about the Nari, if she is a devotee, how is she can trust Lord Krishna?
I heard explanation. Of course, Krishna, as I mentioned, Krishna cannot be cursed.
Yeah, that's for sure. But as a devotee, she's a
free,
like you said,
she's
a pure devotee of the Lord.
Yeah. So that was also like karma was being thrown in there. So Krishna was in dilemma. He was thinking that, okay, now Kurukshetra war is over. My mission is over. Paritrana is and I have established dharma. Then my mission is over now. And I have to go back. I have to leave this world and go back to my abode. How do I do that? And especially, you know, my devotees are present here. My devotees. So Krishna was perplexed. He was a little bit in doubt. To the spiritual world, my abode. How do I do that? And how can I treat my devotees hard? Leaving them here. And he, by Krishna's will, the Gandhari uttered when he was cursed. And then Krishna took that curse as an opportunity. That this is how I can wind up all the other dynasty and take everyone to Vaikuntha, back to my abode. So this was Krishna's arrangement. Yes, any other question? What is this?
You were mentioning that transformation you need to make is internal.
Yes.
And nobody knows, sees whether that is happening or not. But I think when we go out on the distribution and we try to preach to people, and they quickly see what we try to hide from them. It's a transformation that will allow us to serve and bring them closer. Unless we transform, they can't transform.
Please come. Yeah. Thank you. I remember adding to that point, but that's very true. Some of this point is, unless we change ourselves, we cannot change others. I was doing book distribution once, and books are not going at all. No one buys books. And I was getting impatient and, you know, worried. Not worried, I mean, getting nervous. And then next day when I was chanting, some realization came. So the point was, thought came in. That on the book distribution, I expect that everyone listens to me and buy a book from me. Right? They listen and do what I say. But when I am sitting and chanting japa, I am not listening to Krishna. Right? So why would Krishna listen to me Because Krishna is present in everyone's heart, on the book distribution, you talk to people. So it's actually Krishna who inspires that person to listen to that person and take the book. Yeah. But when it comes to my part to listen to Krishna, I am not listening. I am not doing my part and I am expecting Krishna to do his part. That relation came. Mm-hmm. So then, it's true. I am supposed to do my part correctly, then Krishna will do his part correctly. Mm-hmm. And we expect mercy, but free of cost. Mm-hmm. It's not about it. We can only ask. But then it's Krishna's hand. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Yes, ma'am. It depends on how much we are affected by three modes in one day. So, if I am in pain, bodily pain, I can see that I am not able to change nicely. So I try to fix externals first, and then I work on internal chanting and absorb myself in holy name. So externals are affecting me to work on internals in their sense, right? Because I'm affected by these three modes of nature. But when a person makes advancement and transcend externals, isn't affected. They are happy with whatever external conditions are, but they are unmoved in their internal transformation. Does it make sense? Thank you. Okay, we'll end here. So, then, Shri Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.